to fighting champions, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
All right, now, thank you for tuning in to the GSMC MMA Podcast. I am your host, Tate, and joining me today, I always have one of my all-time favorites. I got my man, Will, here. How are you doing there, Will?
I'm doing fantastic. Love these fights.
Excellent. And we also have an added bonus today. Who do we have as an added bonus? We have Sean.
Hello, everyone. I'm just glad to be here and looking forward to it.
This is Sean's first time actually joining us on the GSMC MMA Podcast. And so, Sean, you sound a little nervous.
It's the first time I've been on a live recording studio mic, so I'm sure I'll get used to it. I'm not too worried. You guys seem like you got this down pretty good.
We got you covered. So there's no stress here.
Yeah.
Now tell the audience a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a recent migrant to the Sacramento area. Just graduated from UC Davis, and I'm looking forward to getting some experience in the broadcasting sector. And luckily, I was able to hook up with Andrew here, and he's giving me a shot. So hopefully, I don't blow it.
So. He's going to be, he's an intern here at GSMC, and he's actually learning to possibly become an eventual show host. So we thought we'd bring him on to the GSMC Podcast Network. He has a nice background in boxing and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so he's very knowledgeable. And we are going today be talking about my favorite card of the year. UFC 228 was unbelievable. What was your thoughts, Will, on this card?
I had some hope that it was going to be a good card, and I'm kind of cautious to have any expectations with some events. So I was looking at the card beforehand, and I was thinking, a lot of potential. Hopefully no injuries happen. Hopefully no short-term replacements happen. Hopefully nothing happens. And when the day of the fights came, I paid attention to prelims, and I never stopped watching.
All right. Now, I'm going to say this. Will is a little timid on this, on talking about this card, because Will and I actually had a little bet going about who was going to win the main event. I took Tyron Woodley. Will took Darren Till. And one of us has to do a large batch of push-ups. Who is that person that's doing those push-ups?
It's me, but I was going to do them anyway.
Now, for our newest addition here, he hasn't been baptized to the whole push-up concept of you make a bet, you're betting push-ups. So, one, what was your thoughts on the card? And what is your thoughts on doing push-ups if you make a bet and you lose?
Well, I don't plan on losing, so that's first up. That's first off, I don't plan on losing. Second off, I thought the card was a lot better than I expected. You know, you have the main headliner, Tyron Woodley versus Darren Till. Thought that was going to be a great fight. Little unfortunate in terms of how long it lasted, although Tyron did, you know,
And we'll get to the results in a little bit, yeah. But yes. But as a whole,
I thought it was a pleasant surprise. You know, you had a fallout of the co-main event. And I think that all the fights, including the prelims, still put on a really good show that was just one of those pleasant surprises that you get every so often with UFC events, especially when a lot of times events that are supposed to be stacked, either they fall through with certain fights that are fan favorites or just, you know, they don't turn out to be as exciting as they are meant to be.
All right. So, and I agree with you. I agree with you on that. Especially the last few cards, there's been a little lackluster to them. So I'm going to go right into when I I heard that Nico Montoya had dropped out of the co-main event. Well, I was really looking forward to her fighting Valentina Shevchenko. I was so disappointed, and I was thinking that this card had lost a lot of its luster. And I thought it was so important that that co-main event stayed in place. I was very shocked. Will, what, when you heard that Valentina Shevchenko had dropped out, what did you think?
Well, when I heard that Montano dropped out, that I
was... you're right. Sorry, Bob. Thank you for correcting. Montoya dropped out from the fight, and the champion had dropped out of the fight. So I was just super disappointed and super shocked.
I was really disappointed for Valentina because more than any fighter that I've ever seen that fights in contenders and fights in championship fights, people have pulled out on Valentina on short notice more than anyone. You had that with Amanda Nunes, the champion in 135. And it's just really sad because I thought that she had a really great shot to become champion this time.
I totally thought. I mean, I was in the last show we talked about this. I really thought this was the coming out party for Valentina Shevchenko, and that I thought she was going to win the title. I thought she was going to look spectacular. But one of the things that Valentina kept talking about is how she did not think that Nico would actually make it to the main card, that she thought that she would find a way to drop out of this fight. And like Miss Cleo, she actually predicted it. What was your thoughts when you heard about the fact that she had dropped out?
Well, quite frankly, watching the embeddeds earlier in the week, you kind of see Montoya going through, you know, the supermarket and getting ready for the fights and buying these snacks and, you know, just seeming very confident, ready for a weight cut. However, of course, she misses weight, and then some reports come out, I think from MMAfighting.com, that she had come into fight week at 144 pounds, you know, almost a full 20 pounds above the, you know, strawweight weight limit. So honestly, it really puts into question how prepared or how incentivized she was for this particular fight, because Shevchenko was reportedly weighing in at 128, 129 a couple of days before the weigh-ins, you know, a little bit of overpreparedness, if you will, compared to how much weight a lot of other people cut. So you can tell that Valentina was in that killer instinct, and she was in general just, you know, ready to go. And she's one of those fighters that you can tell is something really special and is destined for UFC gold. And it will come to her at one weight class or another.
Okay, so when I looked at this situation and I saw that she did not make weight, I was very disappointed. And when you, and I've listened to her trainer talk about the fact that, you know, she had a number of medical issues. She had broke her foot. She had like tonsillitis. I guess she had everything under the sun happen to her, and so she had pushed off this fight a number of times. According to Valentina, there was talk of having to fight, and Valentina agreed to fight her in May. Then Valentina agreed to fight her in July. Then you had the September fight, and I guess there was another. And Nico was saying that she wanted to have the fight later. One of the things that I thought about is the fact that Ariel Helwani had reported that the UFC was starting to get a little impatient with Nico not wanting to fight and not wanting to defend the title. And Nico took a major offense to that, and she really attacked Ariel Helwani. But actually, Ariel was kind of vindicated, because with the UFC stripping her of the title so fast, it kind of showed that what Ariel was reporting was actually true. Now, my question to you two is, do you think the UFC was right for stripping her of the title? I'm going to go over here first and see what your thoughts are.
Quite frankly, I think that it was probably the right move. I think that champions should be stripped more if they aren't able to defend in a certain time span. Because at the end of the day, if you're not able to defend your belt as the champ, then are you really the champ? Now, of course, injuries and outside circumstances can change things. But In the first place, I don't even think Tough Fighters should be crowned champion. I think that it's a good idea to give him a UFC contract, but to make him the champion of a division which has so many possible contenders from the 115, the 135, I think it's a little disingenuous in implying that she was, at that time, the best 125er in the world, especially when you have fighters like Shevchenko and, you know, possibly Joanna going up in weight that could, you know, lay claim to such a, you know, to such a claim before the belt and the division were established.
Okay, so you brought up a great point. And when I first heard that they were going to crown a new champion for that new division, and they were going to use the Tough, I was super excited, and I actually enjoyed that whole show. Really loved it. I ended up getting to know a lot of fighters that I was very familiar with through Invicta, but I was never that I didn't know a lot about, like, Nico, but learned a lot about her. My big problem with that whole card, I mean, with using the Tough winner, was I was hoping that they were going to take some of the fighters that were in the bantamweight division and the strawweight division that were going to move up and move down in weight, and I thought they were going to move those guys into the Ultimate Fighter house and crown a champion that way. But by bringing in fighters from outside organizations, I thought that was kind of a bad move, and I thought they had learned their lesson from when they did the whole strawweight situation with Carla Esparza winning it and then her getting blown out by Joanna Jędrzejczyk. The two questions I'm going to bring it over to Will here is, one, do you think that the UFC was wrong for stripping her? And two, what's your thoughts on the fact that Nico was given the title through the Tough House?
Well, I've been paying a lot of attention to this, and Sean brought up some really good points about how the UFC has handled this situation. And I got to agree, I don't believe that you should kind of crowned a champion based off of the Ultimate Fighter reality show. At the same time, I've been paying attention to what Nico is saying and how she hasn't really been the same since that whole experience, because they are fighting very frequently and they have to cut and make weight very frequently. And she's been saying all these different reasons about kidney failure and all these medical issues that she's been having since then.
It does wreak havoc on your body.
It does. It does. But I also think about the first season of The Ultimate Fighter and what Dana White asked all the fighters. Do you want to be a fighter? And then there's another question around that too. Do you want to be a champion? And I get that all fighters come into the ring with injuries and illnesses and different things, and there's always going to be a reason, always going to be an excuse. But time and time again, Nico hasn't showed up. Whether that's one reason or the other, she hasn't showed up. And the UFC can't rely on her as a champion. And I think that they were justified in stripping her. And it's just a business decision at this point, because you have an amalgamation of business, entertainment, and sport. And that's what the UFC is. And they have to take care of that before anything else.
Okay, now I'm going to give you my take on the UFC stripping her. My initial thoughts of them stripping her, initially I wasn't that excited about it. And I'm like, wow, they were like really quick on the trigger. But then I thought about it, and I just said, okay, Will, name a champ. Let's say, name one.
Robert Whittaker.
Okay, let's use Robert Whittaker as an example. Let's say Robert Whittaker decides that Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero is going to fight again for a third time. Robert Whittaker shows up the day of weigh-in, and he misses weight. What happens to him? What would happen is they would still put that fight on, and Yoel could still fight for the title, but Robert Whittaker would be stripped of the title because he did not make weight. If you get to the day of the weigh-in and you miss weight, it is normal to strip the champion. Now, it's never happened, because part of being a champion and being a professional is making weight. And if you are the champ and you do not make championship weight, you should be stripped. Do you guys agree or disagree?
Well, quite frankly, I agree, because this is your job, and you are, as the champion, the pinnacle of your weight division. You're supposed to be the example that young fighters and, you know, people looking to get into the sport look up to, as, you know, like a role model, like a George St. Pierre type figure, or, you know, even an Anderson Silva type figure. In general, the champions should be held to a higher standard because of the added bonuses, the added money, the added prestige. They get a lot more benefits by being champ, but that comes with added responsibilities. And one of those responsibilities is not only making weight, but making championship weight while doing the media, while having all these people studying your videos, learning your techniques, and trying to game plan for the fact that they plan on fighting you someday.
Yeah, no, I agree. Part of this is the reason why it's way easier to become champion, but it's harder to maintain that title, because you have to make weight, you have to do your media, you have to. There's a lot of things that go into being the champion. Ronda Rousey used to say it best: everyone thinks they want to be champ, but they don't know what it's like to be champ, and it is a different story. And Nico, being kind of new to the UFC, first off, new to being a UFC champion, where she's been a champion and I believe it was King of the Cage or one of those, but that's a whole different media obligation. There's a whole different situation there. Also, for Nico, a fighter who has been fighting in very small organizations, there's not a lot of money in women's mixed martial arts, especially outside of the UFC. There's just quite a bit less money. So you have a situation where a fighter who has been brought into the UFC to fight, she's been given the championship. She just went through the tough house. And one of the things that happens is you are now a champion where maybe you didn't have insurance. You didn't have the ability. You have all these nagging issues that you wanted to get taken care of. Now you're in the UFC. You just finished the tough house. I don't blame Nico for wanting to get some of the issues and things taken care of, because this is me coming out on partially understanding what Nico was going through, which is I want to get my body right so that I can be at my best, because in order for her to beat a Valentina Shevchenko, she literally has to be at her best. If she is off, she is going to get destroyed. And so I understand why she went that route of calling off some of the fights and pushing it back. But once you agree to that date, you have to perform. And that means part of your job is make weight, win your fight. And she failed the very first test, and that is miss weight. Anyone else got a comment on that either way?
I mean, if you're signing up to be a fighter, you have to sign up for all aspects of being a fighter. And there's fights within fights, whether that's the weight cut, whether that's the diet, whether that's all these little training issues that you have. And I just don't think that she properly prepared for all the components of being a championship fighter.
Well, quite frankly, it reminds me of one thing Mike Tyson once said, where he was saying it's hard to get out of the morning to run when you're sleeping in silk sheets. And I think this is a case of Nico Montoya. She just became champ. She's finally getting a regular paycheck through the UFC. She has fame, notoriety, etc., the works. And she just clearly was not prepared to meet the expectations of those privileges she earned. So at the end of the day, this is a lesson for her to learn, and hopefully she'll make a comeback in terms of fighting for that gold once again. But it's certainly not going to be as easy as her first run through the tough house. Now she's going to have to face the likes of a Shevchenko or any of the other killers that are coming down from the 135 women's division to 125.
Okay, and we're gonna take a break in a quick second. One thing I'm going to say before we wrap this segment up is I had my hands, toes, and everything crossed. Once I heard Nico had dropped out, I had my dream matchup that I thought. I was hoping that the UFC was going to contact Joanna Jędrzejczyk and give her a shot at that flyweight title and have it be Valentina Shevchenko versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk for the title. And I was hoping it was going to be a short fill-in. I did not get my dream, but I was totally pulling for that one. With that note, we're going to go take a break. When we come back, we are going to start talking about UFC 228, which was a blockbuster card. But we're going to start off by talking about Tyron Woodley versus Darren Till. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
All right, we're back, and myself, William, and our special guest, Sean Cosley, here, we were just talking about the situation with the UFC and the flyweight division, and the fact that Nico Montoya versus Valentina Shevchenko did not happen, and the kind of ramifications of it. Now we are going to dive into that UFC 228 card, and we're going to start right off with that main event. The main event, which featured Tyron Woodley, I got to make sure it's not Tyrone, it's Tyron Woodley versus the upstart Darren Till. Tyron won by a second round stoppage. Were any of you guys, first off, were you surprised about the results? I was not. I had predicted, and had bet Will that I predicted that Tyron Woodley would stop Darren Till in the second round. And the reason why I had picked Tyron was, it was Darren Till's first time going into an event like this. Tyron Woodley has always been, he's a thinking man's fighter. He's always super prepared. He was ready for this, where this was a brand new experience for Darren Till. So I wasn't surprised. I thought this is kind of what would happen. I'm going to go with Will first. Give me your thoughts on that fight, and how surprised were you?
I'm not very surprised. Going into this fight, I had a tough time choosing who to pick for.
You did. To be honest with the bet, you were kind of, you know, because I was so strongly for Woodley, you were kind of forced into this bet a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to do push-ups either way, either result. But I just really wanted to root for Till for, I'm not sure. I just wanted to believe in his confidence that he had in himself. But it found that at fight night, he didn't really have that much confidence in himself. And that's what I witnessed during the fight. He wasn't doing the right pressuring. He wasn't doing some of the things that got him the win over Wonderboy and Cowboy Cerrone. And to be honest, that's hard to do against someone like Woodley. Woodley is the bad stylistic matchup for him, because he's going to sit back, he's going to be patient, he's going to look for openings, and he's going to crack you with that right hand of his. And that's exactly what he did against Till.
Now, that was my whole thing when I was looking at this fight. When I was doing the matchup, I had been so, so impressed by Darren Till. But the thing about it that I always like Tyron Woodley, and I know a lot of people get grumpy about Woodley is a thinking man's fighter. He's also, from his experience, he's been fighting for so long, he realizes that he has big muscles and he can burn out. So over the years, he learned to pace himself. He also learned that how to close the gap. And that's the one thing that Woodley does better than anyone in the UFC, is he closes the gap. So he sits back, he paces himself, he reserves his, he stores up his power and makes sure he doesn't burn himself out, and then he strikes like a cobra. And that's the thing that scares a lot of fighters. No one wants to be in that situation where they're going in right when Woodley is coming to close ground because of the power that he has. And that's where kind of what ended up costing Darren Till. Darren Till was very timid to put pressure on Woodley, and it ended up costing him in the long run. What was your thoughts on what you saw, Sean?
Well, honestly, I wasn't very surprised by the start of the fight. Of course, Till's never fought in a full five-round fight that was actually gone the full five rounds, at least in the UFC. And honestly, now, Woodley...
And I apologize, I didn't mean to cut you off, but... So you weren't surprised that he only landed two shots?
I'm surprised that the fight ended that he only landed two shots, but I'm not surprised that he took his time in the first round, especially when you consider the fact that Woodley is very experienced in five-round fights. He has a very patient style, and also ever since he started training at Duke Rufus's in Wisconsin, he's shown a very educated perspective to each opponent. And quite frankly, I'm not surprised that he got the knockout due to the fact that Darren Till is the type of fighter that he likes to come in with his chin up and his hands low. And yes, that may work with certain opponents, but with Tyron Woodley, the current UFC welterweight champ, you can't really afford to make mistakes like that because he is so big and so explosive that one punch can send you into such a rush that the fight is basically almost over. You know, although he did finish him by a Darce choke, there was not much Till could do against it because he probably was, you know, in another universe due to that, you know, just power of that straight that Tyron unleashed upon him when Till was coming in.
Okay. Now, this is when, once he landed the shot, this is one of the things I talk about when I say that Tyron Woodley is one of the smartest fighters in the UFC. He had him hurt. He jumped on him, but he realized. And that's one of the things that separates a guy like Tyron Woodley from a lot of other fighters. He jumped on him. He started putting the ground and pound on. But you can see how it's like he dropped it in low gear and he started pacing himself and started making very, very smart decisions on how he wasn't going to burn himself out. He took his time dropping mean, nasty elbows on Darren Till. And then kind of you could see the punishment that he was dishing out. But then there was a point where, you know, he was starting to set him up for that Darce choke. And you were seeing that, to me, you could see that it was just about to happen. And then when he struck with that with the Darce choke and it was over. How did you see it?
Well, it was tough for me because the most surprising aspect of the fight was Till's ground game. And I'm going to give him, like, all credit due. I don't know if that's his actual ground game because he was really hurt before that. But I didn't see any semblance of a guard there. I didn't see any semblance of defensive jiu-jitsu there. I just saw a fending for life. But I'm going to totally... That's just Woodley's wrestling and maybe Till being almost knocked unconscious. So what I found was that... And I later confirmed this in Woodley's interviews, is that he was testing him throughout on the ground, throwing shots at him, seeing what was open, and he kept on finding that he could slide the arm under Till's neck. And that, to me, was just poor jiu-jitsu. And maybe Till wasn't his best at that moment, but I was just really surprised by Till's lack of ground game.
Okay, you brought up a great point. A really great point. And this is one of the things where both of you guys who have done a lot of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, maybe not a lot, but both of you guys have experience in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I have experience in Jiu-Jitsu. They're both pretty close. But one of the things that you find is if you've been drilling, that's the point of doing drilling Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu That's a tough thing to say sometimes. Wow. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Say it five times fast.
BJJ. You can just say BJJ.
Jits. And if you're drilling and you're doing it constantly and you're constantly doing it, the reason why you do it over and over and over again is for the fact that when you get knocked halfway unconscious and you are not in your mindset, instinct take over. And you watch the Damian Mayas and some of the other fighters, even when they get knocked silly, because it's been put in their head, they don't have to think about it. They automatically go into they just naturally go into a defensive posture. A prime example was the fight Gaethje versus Vic. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, when you look at that fight, I'm bringing up the fact that the fight is over. Gaethje comes over to say congratulate him. And Vic, who is on Dream Street, sitting on his stool, not thinking correctly, what does he do? He goes for a single leg after the fight is over. That's because he has been drilled. He's been drilling over and over again. So even when you are on Dream Street, second nature kicks in. And I didn't see that from Darren Till. I did not see that whatsoever. And so I agree with you that I'm questioning about how strong is his ground game and how much drilling he's done, because it did not seem like he was prepared to fight a ground fight. I didn't see the preparation there once he was on the ground. And that Darce choke, Woodley was able to set him up for that Darce choke with very little effort. What is your thought, Sean?
Well, honestly, when you think about it and you look at Woodley's past fights in the UFC, he hasn't really had to use his wrestling as much or his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu skills, because he knows he has such a good wrestling background and the right kind of build that he can counter any sort of offensive wrestling used against him. So you like with Damian Maia or with his other opponents, he's never really had the threat of someone shooting in a takedown against him. Of course, Darren Till, same aspect. He's very big for the division, and he's big enough that he can stop people from going in for the offensive wrestling, and he's used to keeping it on the feet. So Darren Till, probably based on experience or at least his camp, was planning to keep it on the feet and planning on finding a way in order to defeat Tyron on the feet, because it had been so long since we had seen Woodley really develop or at least engage his offensive wrestling. So it doesn't surprise me that Tyron Woodley was able to pull that out and get a Darce and secure it like that. That is why you drill all the time with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I can remember thousands of times I've done the same armbar, and I can still do it to this day, even after a couple of years of not practicing it. So at the end of the day, it's just kudos to Dean Thomas and teaching Tyron Woodley the ropes of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And quite frankly, congratulations to Tyron for getting his black belt. That's a huge accomplishment. That's a lifelong accomplishment.
Bringing up that is a good segue into what I wanted to talk about next. Did anyone notice how when they gave Tyron the belt, he was not very emotional? But when he got the black belt, that meant way more to him than the UFC belt. My take on that was, and I sent a message to Will, was that the UFC has treated Tyron Woodley so bad for so long, and that is my opinion, that I feel like the UFC has not promoted him, have talked about him very poorly, and hasn't supported him as a champ, that it meant more from him to get his black belt from his camp and his family than the UFC title. I feel like Woodley is fighting his opponent and the UFC, and he doesn't even get a chance to enjoy it because the UFC just does not want to support him. Will, give me your thoughts.
I mean, Tyron's kind of, I totally agree with you, and I think kind of Tyron's going to agree with you, but he won't admit it in that sense, but he's admitted that he is just going to focus on the fight because he can't control his fans. He can't control the fans' perspective of him. He can't control the UFC's perspective of him. So he's just kind of dealing with what matters most, keeping that championship belt, doing as much as he can to become a fighter and become a great fighter and become the greatest of all time in the division. And, I mean, he's doing a fantastic job of that. He's just defending the belt, doing as much as humanly possible in the fight realm itself. He's dealing with weight. He's dealing with all the media obligations. And to be honest, that's all that they can expect with him, considering all the push that they're giving him in the media itself.
You can definitely tell that the UFC doesn't necessarily view Tyron as their most favorable champion in the way that, you know, Dana White has been on record talking about Tyron, as well as, you know, certain other aspects of the media slash UFC's publicity about Tyron and his fights. You could tell that they're putting this big push behind Darren Till, especially as being a UK draw. With Michael Bisping retiring, you could definitely see the strategy of the UFC trying to create and capitalize on another UK star in order to, you know, keep their hold on that market instead of, like, you know, maybe possibly losing some, you know, local fans to Bellator fighters or other organizations. So in regards to that, you can tell that Tyron is in some way justified with how he feels the UFC has treated him. But in another aspect, you can also understand that he's way happier to have his black belt, which quite frankly is in a lot of ways a, you know, an achievement that could take longer than a UFC belt. Granted, not everyone gets a UFC belt, but this is a black belt, a showing of mastery that comes from someone who you've had blood, sweat, and tears with for probably at least a decade under your coaches.
I was going to say, I don't have a black belt. I have a brown belt, though, but I don't have a black belt.
Yeah, no. I mean, I went to, when I first started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the head of my studio didn't even have his black belt yet. He had a brown belt. And, you know, there's people who run studios who don't even have that distinction yet. And quite frankly, there's a lot of hard work that it takes even to getting a brown belt, let alone a black belt.
Exactly. Now, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you on that one. But my next question to you guys is, and we're going to start with Darren Till first. With the way he got blown out, and we all agree that it was a very lopsided fight when you only land two shots in the whole fight. What's next for Darren Till?
Honestly, I think he should try to take at least 6 to 7 months off. He's been fighting a lot lately. That's a lot to go through with a camp. It's a lot of mental and physical stress. You know, taking a shot like that, even though it was only a couple of hard shots Woodley put on him, it was all that Woodley needed. Just give his time for his body to heal, his brain to heal. And honestly, once he comes back, I think that he should be looking at a top five fighter. You know, perhaps a, you know, Robbie Lawler matchup or some matchup that can still get him a main event on like a fight night or at least a high up on the main card of a pay-per-view, just to keep him relevant. But it's clear that with his performance against Woodley that he's not getting a title shot for at least another couple fights, especially with how many high-level contenders there are in the 170 division. Colby Covington alone should be Tyron's next fight, especially since he was the interim champ.
Okay, and we're going to talk about that next. But you brought up a point where you thought like maybe fighting a Robbie Lawler and how much time to take off. One of the things I'm going to tell you, and this is just my speculation, I predict that Darren Till will never fight in the welterweight division ever again. I think he will go up in weight. He's had a hard time making weight. He has that middleweight body. I think he would be a much stronger fighter as a middleweight. He just got blown out there. One of the best moves for him to make is if he moved up in weight, it opens up a huge group of fights that there's a ton of fights that he could get as a middleweight where he's currently ranked. There's very few fights that's going to put him in a situation to get a title match again. He is, because unless Tyron Woodley loses, he's out of the title picture for a good amount of time. I think the middleweight division is where he's going to go. Will, what's your thoughts?
I agree with both of you in a sense, because yes, he should take some time off, recover, and work on that ground game. And then secondly, I don't think that he'll ever fight in the welterweight division ever again either, because when he made weight, he literally said, "I'm glad that was a I'm glad I got it done with, and that'll be the last time I'll ever have to make weight again." In that way, so I think that he's a growing kid. He's working on all of his fundamentals and being in the optimal condition for now. But I think the optimal condition is middleweight division for him in the future.
Okay. Now, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about what's next for Tyron Woodley. And then we're also going to talk about that co-main event. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
The average sedan is built with a steel frame and equipped with 6 airbags. Remember this the next time you see someone walking. Drivers, be aware. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety. The average SUV has 2 blind spots, weighs between 4 and 6,000 pounds, and takes about 6 seconds to stop. Remember this the next time you're on foot. Pay attention, people. Pedestrians don't have armor. A message from the California Office of Traffic Safety.
All right, I am back here with Sean and Will, and we have just been talking about that UFC main event, Tyron Woodley versus Darren Till, and we were just talking about, you know, our thoughts on the fight, but also what's next for Darren Till. And William and I both agreed that we thought this would be Darren Till's last fight at the welterweight division. Sean thought that Darren Till should definitely take some time off. Now, let's talk about Tyron Woodley. The first thing I want to say before we get to that part is one of the things that I didn't like about what was said before the fight was by Dana White when he said that Tyron Woodley, that the crowd didn't like Tyron Woodley, that he's boring, kind of implied that. But if you look at this event, when Tyron Woodley came out, there wasn't, you didn't hear a lot of boos. When the fight initially started, I heard a lot of USA, USA chants. Did anyone else notice that as well?
Yeah, I thought there were going to be more Liverpool fans over there, but I guess a lot of them showed up for the weigh-in because I kind of see both perspectives.
Okay. What about you?
Well, quite frankly, I'm not surprised at all that Woodley had more of a homecoming crowd out there. And yes, there were more Liverpool fans at the weigh-ins, but I think that's more of a factor that people who are from Liverpool are coming out for, like, it's like basically a vacation for them. So if you're already out to halfway across the world, you might as well show up for the, you know, events beforehand. Whereas, you know, the more local crowds probably just show up for the event itself instead of the weigh-ins and the pressers and whatnot.
Okay, so now that Tyron has had this spectacular win, and I know the Israel Adesanya is right there, and people have been talking about him as a possible title fight, but I don't think that's going to happen. The fight that needs to be made is Tyron Woodley versus Corey Covington, and if that is the fight that's going to be made, how do you guys see this breaking down? I personally, when I first started hearing about Kobe being like the interim champion and everything that was going on, I didn't like it. But I'm going to tell you why. I think he is the toughest fight for Tyron Woodley. And the reason why I say he's one of the toughest fights for Tyron Woodley is the fact that no one's going to beat Tyron Woodley whatsoever until someone makes Tyron uncomfortable. You can't let Tyron sit against the wall, you know, just a few, you know, like a foot or so away from the wall and let him pace himself and ready to spring on you like a cobra. If you allow him to do that, you will get caught. just like Wonder Boy did and just like Darren Till, and it was going to be a short night. You need to make him very uncomfortable. One of the things that I could see Kobe Covington doing is kind of what he did with Damian Maya. Jump on him. Constantly pressure. Making Tyron fight a different fight than a patient, I'm going to wait and I'm going to strike when I want to strike and I'm going to keep you at bay. You need someone that's going to climb all over him, drain his gas tank, and make him burn out. And that's why I'm very intrigued to see how a Tyron Woodley, Kobe Covington fight will come out. Who wants to be the first one to give me their take on who Tyron Woodley should fight, and do you agree, and who would be the better matchup? Would it be Israel or would it be Kobe? Okay, let's go with Sean.
Well, quite frankly, I agree with a lot of your analysis there that I personally myself, especially after seeing the Rafael Dos Anjos fight against Colby Covington, I do think that Colby Covington is the worst matchup for Tyron Woodley. And that is due to the fact that, as we saw in his last fight, he has the cardio to keep up for five rounds of offensive, grinding style sort of wrestling. And his ability to move on into strikers like RDA and whatnot, who might be against the fence, and just keep grinding them and pushing the pace. I think that's Tyron's one major weakness, is the fact that he is so strong, he has so much muscle on him, that he cannot afford to put out a steady pace over five rounds the whole time. He needs those breaks, and quite frankly, unless he's got, you know, Colby half knocked out, he's not going to be getting those breaks. So I'd be willing to even throw push-ups down on a bet that if they do fight, and they will probably fight in the next 7 to 8 months, you know, considering the fact that Tyron did have a broken hand from his fight against Till, I would say that Colby Covington takes it if it goes beyond the third round. If it goes a full five.
And it's just a little too early to be putting out bets right now on that one. I will keep that in my in mind for future.
I'm just calling it early.
Possibilities. The rookie's starting to get out here and want to jump out early, Will. What was your thoughts?
I'll take that bet early. I'll take that bet, too. But I'll talk about that in a second. So, first of all, I don't think that there's any other fights for Tyron to take other than Colby Covington. And if I'm not mistaken, Israel Adesanya is in the middleweight division. So I don't think that's a fight unless Tyron Woodley wants to move up where I think his biggest challenges are, which I totally would support if you wanted to do that in that case, too.
Now, wasn't, and I apologize about cutting you off, but wasn't there talk of that Israel was going to be the guy that filled in if Till didn't make weight?
No, you're thinking of Kamaru Usman.
You know what? I apologize. You are right. It was Kamaru Usman, not, okay, sorry about that.
Well, I like that fight, too, and I think that is honestly a harder fight for Colby Covington, or than Colby Covington. Because
Usman's a beast.
Yeah, Usman is more of a beast to me than Colby Covington is to Woodley. So that's tough for me. But I think if that fight was to play out, the Colby versus Woodley fight, if that fight was to play out, you get a similar fight to the Damian Maya Woodley fight. I think that Colby Covington isn't good enough as far as the wrestling goes to really pressure Tyron. And I don't think that his stand-up is going to be even near Tyron's level. So I think that if they were to fight, Colby's going to be aggressive, yes. But does he have the chin and the striking defense to fight Tyron Woodley? No, I don't think that he has that covered, and I think that he's going to get knocked out cold.
Interesting. So you feel very strongly that that Tyron would win that one?
Yes. Yes.
You know what? This is one time, Will and I traditionally, we agree on a lot of fights, but when it comes to the main events, we rarely ever do, and that's why we've been able to bet. This is one time we will not be placing a bet, because I just think Tyron is just so much more of a fighter. I think, I personally think, although I have more respect for Kofi Covington's game than a lot of people do. I think that he has moved up in rank a lot faster strictly because of his mouth more than his game. Now, he has started to back it up, but that is – Tyron wants a big money fight. That's his big money fight. He's not going to get GSP. He's not going to get Diaz. So his big money fight that he's going to get is actually going to be Kobe Covington because of what he says. So with that being said, we are going to move on from that main event, and we're going to go on to a fight. We're going to look at that women's strawweight fight. Women's bantamweight fight. I got Nico still in. Nico still in my mind. What's that?
Flyweight.
What did I say?
Strawweight, then bantam.
You know, guys,
he hasn't had his coffee yet this morning.
You're both wrong because this is actually a strawweight fight. It's 115.
Yeah, this is strawweight. What did I say? And I said,
you corrected it to bantamweight, which was 135, and then flyweight is actually 125.
Oh, geez, we're all wrong. Well, that's fair.
Because it's one of those things where sometimes you get them mixed up. But I knew what I was talking about, just got them twisted around. But with that being said, the co-main event, Jessica Andrade, the number two strawweight fighter, versus Karolina Kovacevic, the number four rated fighter. This fight, to me, did not disappoint as well. Jessica Andrade came out firing right from the beginning. Karolina Kovacevic weathered the storm, started to mount her defense, started to get back into the fight, was actually catching Jessica Andrade, and maybe, arguably, the cleanest shot I have ever seen in any women's mixed martial arts fight. Jessica Andrade threw, was it a right hand?
It was a right hand.
It was a right hand that Karolina Kovacevic got nailed with, and it was over. One of the things, if you've ever been fighting, the most dangerous shot in the world is always the shot you don't see. And the reason why that is you can brace yourself for a shot that you see. You can tighten your muscles up. You can brace for impact. But when you don't see a shot and it comes out of nowhere, it's a wrap. And that's kind of what happened in this fight. You guys, talk to me. What was your thoughts on this fight? Give me your breakdown of the co-main event.
I mean, I absolutely love this fight. I loved it on paper, but I knew what was going to happen beforehand. So I was just, my eyes were glued to the screen. I was just waiting for it to happen. And sure enough, it happened really early because they were both willing to throw down. And I was really surprised that Karolina was willing to engage in such a stand-up fight with her. But it's really difficult to beat Jessica Andrade when you're throwing haymakers. And I don't think there's anyone on the planet other than Joanna Jędrzejczyk that can stand up with Jessica Andrade. And I'm really excited to see her potentially match up with Rose.
I am so excited about seeing a possible Jessica Andrade versus Rose fight. It's amazing how Jessica goes from a bantamweight position to a strawweight. When she was a bantamweight fighter, she was a good fighter. But as a strawweight, she's a great fighter. And she's so strong. She is pound for pound. It seems like she's like the strongest woman in all of women's mixed martial arts.
You're right.
Now,
have you seen those arms?
Yes, I mean it's amazing how strong she is. Now, what about you, Sean? Did you watch that fight, right?
Yeah, I watched that fight. I really enjoyed it.
What did you think of it?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, I thought this fight was going to go one of two ways. Either option A, like it went, you know, in the first round, Jessica Andrade was going to be launching haymakers, and maybe she was going to catch Carolina, especially due to the fact that Carolina's Muay Thai style leaves her head kind of on a straight plane, and it's not as much of a swivel and defensive maneuvering as you would get in Western boxing. Or two, if it went beyond the first or second round, due to the fact that Jessica Andrade has more muscles and it takes more oxygen to output that kind of power, I thought that Carolina was going to take her to a decision and just outpace her as a whole. So it's either going to be a knockout by Andrade or a, you know, decision by Carolina.
Okay. Now, and with that same situation, same fight or same weight class, you're looking at the strawweight division. And there was also a fight on this card, which was Carla Esparza against Tatiana Suarez. And Tatiana Suarez came out, and I felt like I was watching a female Khabib. She made the number 6-rated strawweight in the world. She just ate her up. And the reason why I bring this fight in when talking about the co-main event is, because after, with such an impressive victory by Tatiana Suarez, there's a number of people that say that Tatiana Suarez should get the next title shot against Rose instead of Jessica Andrade. My question is to you guys is this. One, what did you think about the Carla Esparza-Tatiana Suarez fight? But two, who do you think should be the next fight versus Rose Namajunas?
Well, quite frankly, congratulations to Suarez. You know, that was a great fight, and Carla Esparza has been a, you know, staple of the women's women's strawweight division for a long time.
Champion.
Yeah, of course. But honestly, good for her, kudos, but she is not ready for a title fight yet. And I just think it would be a disservice to her more than anyone to put her at such a high stage and fail, you know, against people who are experienced, such as a Rose Namajunas, who before Rose even got her first title shot, she had two or three losses, and she learned from those defeats. Now, granted, Suarez doesn't want to lose on the way to this title shot, but there's a lot to learn as you keep fighting within those top-ranked fighters. You know, I would like to see her fight, you know, a top five next, or even a top three. I mean, who's to say that she couldn't be the next fight for Jessica Andrade, or, you know, a number of options. Quite frankly, the women's strawweight division is so deep that there's no reason that they should rush Tatiana, such a high-level prospect, too soon. She's only had 7 fights. That's not that many in the MMA world. And quite frankly, she's going to have another 13 or so more at least throughout her career. Might as well be best prepared when you finally do get that title shot.
Will.
As a fight fan, I absolutely love the fight. I loved how it was wrestling versus wrestling, and one definitely overtook the other in Suarez defeating Esparza. And this is where it gets tough as a matchmaker. You don't want to put on the best fights per se. You kind of want to develop certain fighters and give them different looks as they go up the ranks. So, me personally, as a fight fan, I would love to see Tatiana Suarez versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I do not think that is a great decision on matchmaking part, because you have two contenders there, and I don't think that squashing one of these contenders for the sake of a number one contender is a good decision. So I would like to see Tatiana Suarez fight someone in the top five. She's called out Kovalkajic, but that's not going to happen for another 2 to 3 months because of the knockout that Andrade had on her. So I'd give her one more fight and potentially the title fight after that. As far as contenders go, I don't think that Andrade needs to do anything else to fight Rose for that title. I think that she's earned it, and it's just an amazing knockout that she had. And I think that this is the perfect timing for both of them to fight for a title and a number one contender fight.
Okay. I am not taking favors here, but Will, I agree with you 100%. Sean, I disagree with you. And let me explain.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So a fight's going to break out in studio right now.
I got my knife.
Wow. He's a new guy's going to cut me. the funny thing is, I do understand where you're coming from, where you're looking at her record as a 7-0, but this is no ordinary 7-0 fighter. You have Tatiana Suarez, which was considered the number one wrestler in the world, future Olympic champion. And the only reason why she didn't fulfill that dream was because she ended up getting cancer and her Olympic dreams got cut short. Then she comes out, she starts out 4-0, she's setting the world on fire, and a situation where I believe she had a torn labrum, which took her out for over a year. She has been fighting at a top level for quite a while and has been nothing but lights out. It's kind of like looking at, like when I look at Khabib and I look at Cody Garbrandt, both of those guys moved up the rankings really fast strictly because they were dominating. And so Tatiana Suarez is a kind of that kind of fighter who is dominating. So if they gave Tatiana Suarez a title shot, would I be upset? I would not be. But where I agree with Will is Jessica Andrade has done enough. She's been at the top ranks for long enough that she should be the next fight. I would like to see... I know they've brought up the Tatiana Suarez versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk fight. I don't know if that fight's going to happen, especially when Joanna and her... Joanna was her trainer and an Ultimate Fighter. So I would not think that would be the fight to go with. I would love to see Tatiana, since I agree with you guys that that maybe she's one or two fights away. The person that I would like to see her get into the ring with would be, oh my God, I'm trying to think of her name right now. That's
Claudia
Gadelha. That's the person who I think should be the next person that comes up. So with that being said, I look at that and Claudia Gadelha versus a Tatiana Suarez fight, I think would be the perfect next fight for her. What about you guys? What's your thoughts?
Quite frankly, yes, that would be a good fight on paper. However, I feel that to get Tatiana prepared for a potential title fight, yes, Claudia would be a good fight, but just for in her camp's eyes, or at least in her own like career's eyes, I think she should try to face striking specialists in order to get ready for Rose. Because yes, Rose has that really good grappling game, especially with submissions, but it's her slick movement in and out of the pocket and with her striking in her hands that really won her the title and helped her defend it the second time against Joanna. Maybe you fight Claudia, and if she wins, then you fight a Joanna. But I really don't think you'd be doing her a service if you just had her prepare against wrestling heavy ranked opponents only and did not give her a test at a high level of striking.
Now, I agree with what you're saying. The big difference is, and I don't think you're wrong whatsoever, is most times it's not going to be up to someone. It's not going to be up to her management on who she's going to fight. She's going to have to answer to Sean Shelby on who's the next most interesting fight for her. And when you start thinking about names and trying to build her name, Joanna and Claudia are two big names that would build her brand. Do you see where I'm coming from on that one? I'm not saying that you're wrong. I agree with you that I think that would be smart. I just don't know if they're gonna have that kind of a luxury to put that together. What about you, Will? What's your thoughts?
No, I gotta agree with you, Tate, because when I'm looking at the division and we kind of have it in front of us here, it's a lot of grapplers in the division. It's going to be hard to find a striker there. It really is, other than Joanna. And the funny thing is that when I'm looking at what the fight that just took place against Carla Esparza, yeah, she's mainly a wrestler, and you kind of do want to give her a striker, but The thing about Claudia Gadelha is that she can strike, and I think that she's an improvement in terms of striking than Carla Esparza. So that would give another look into how dominant Tatiana Suarez can be in the stand-up and in the ground game. So I think that Claudia wants a case for the title herself. So I think that there's a good mix there, and they're both going to be competing for it. The odd man out is going to be Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who could very well fight for the title again. If it's Rose that wins this fight, I don't think that she'll get a third shot at Rose. So it's going to be very interesting.
Well, see, and that's where it's interesting, because I see a situation where if the UFC is trying to really build that flyweight division, then the best fight that they can make to make a big splash would be to make it go Valentina Shevchenko versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk. That's the big money fight. And the UFC is about making big money fights. I think that's the biggest, you know, event they can put on as far as a women's strawweight division. And I think the perfect place is to put it on the undercard as the co-main event, right there where you have Amanda Nunes versus Chris Cyborg, and you make the co-main event Joanna versus Valentina Shevchenko for that flyweight division. That's a women's card that a lot of people would be wanting to take a look at it. Sean, your thoughts?
Just imagine that, like, back in the day when the UFC would name each event, this would be UFC Ladies Night. You know?
I love it.
One for two, tooths knocked out. Oh. But, I think that's a good idea.
I did not see that coming. I'm just being honest. That just threw me off out of left field there. That's impressive.
Oh, don't worry about it. Anytime. But, no, quite frankly, I think that part of the issue with Joanna right now is the fact that she did have two. She lost to Rose, then had the rematch. And when you lose the rematch, you're kind of in a stuck position for a while in that weight class, because you're not going to be getting a title shot anytime soon. It's going to be at least 3 to 4 fights if you're lucky. I think it's the right time for Joanna to move up to 125. And quite frankly, she has a lot of really good matchups there. And I think she could really solidify herself as the, you know, greatest of all time women's MMA fighter if she were able to overcome and win a 125 title. And I think that would give her enough time at the end of the day to possibly come down and re-challenge for that 115 title. So at the end of the day, you know, just depending on perspective, there's a lot of things she could do, but I don't think what she could do right now is another shot for the 115 title anytime soon. But what do you think about that, Will?
No, I totally agree with you. I think that it's a good time for her career to focus on that. And also, it works for the strawweight division because this new character, this Tatiana Suarez, coming off of injury, she's been out of the game for a while, is already cementing herself as a top contender. So this will give her a chance to fight for the title herself, build that up. And as I've seen in a lot of interviews, she's actually interested in becoming a double champ, just like Conor McGregor, just like Daniel Cormier. So she's actually said that's one of her aspirations. And I would love to see a flyweight fight with Joanna and Tatiana Suarez in the future.
Well, that's a little bit of putting the cart before the horse. She hasn't even fought a top five opponent yet in her first division, let alone won a belt. So, I mean, you got to dream big at this point when you're in the UFC. You might as well. But quite frankly, I see that Shevchenko and the Tatiana Suarez and Joanna and Rose are all going to be the future of those two divisions for at least the next couple of years, foreseeable few years. And there's a lot of opportunities and matchups to make, especially with, you know, Valentina's sister coming into the picture. We don't know how she's going to do in the UFC soon, but that could easily add an extra dimension to those two weight classes, especially with her style being so similar to Valentina's.
Okay. And with that, letting you guys get the final two words in, this is going to conclude our episode of the GSMC MMA podcast, the UFC 228 edition. Thank you, guys. And we will be back to talk about that card coming up for the first trip to Russia. So our next card, we'll be talking about the trip to Russia with the UFC. Thank you. And to all, have a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.